Forward momentum.
Wiz Laboratories, March 27th, 2029.
Damn, the pathways are degenerating again.
Dr. Stingray?
I took my glasses off and rested my forehead against my palm. It was staring me right in the face. I knew it was. It had to be something so simple. The artificial neural pathways could handle the thought patterns as long as it was yes or no. One or zero.
Dr. Stingray?
But when any pattern that didn't match that simplicity was introduced, the charge became too great. The protein chains ripped themselves apart, the whole matrix disintegrated.
Dr. Stingray, there's someone here.
One and zero, that was the problem. I was approaching this as a simple binary issue. After all, how could any uncertainty be expressed in absolute binary? Maybe the answer was a more complex layer. Not yes and no, but yes, no, maybe yes, maybe no, and then...
Dr. Stingray!
Yes, Richard, what is it?
Mr. Mason's here to see you, sir.
It's 2 in the morning, kid. I'm busy. Tell him he'll get his android brain when I'm done with it, and these constant interruptions are slowing me down. I cut off the intercom. Then I drove a screwdriver through the speaker. When I say hold my calls, I mean it. Coffee. Yes, coffee. I got a cup of coffee. It was probably sentient itself, judging by its reluctance to be drunk. And sat back down at my desk. Notes and samples were strewn everywhere. Except in one corner to the right. Only a single item there. My picture. My proudest moment. Dearest Cassandra, holding newborn Mackie in her arms, little Celia peering over the side of the hospital bed in wonder. Celia, my beautiful little angel. In my mind, I see her, lying still and lifeless in that horrible cell of a room, tubes and that damn halo of cold iron piercing her skull. Does she even know the same accident that put her there took her mother? Cassandra, so gentle, so brave, spinning the wheel of the car to put the most mass between the onrushing truck and her little girl, but the least between herself. It would not be in vain. Professor Alvarez would already be throwing chalk at me for being so distracted. Wait. Alvarez? I remembered. Yes, a small stack of mail delivered to the lab. A letter from Boston atop it. I looked beneath a pile of failed samples and found the stack. Harrison's neat penmanship on a cream-colored envelope, so old-fashioned. So like him. I opened the letter.
Dear Carl, first, my condolences on the death of your wife. I wish I could have been a shoulder for you in your grief, but my own failing health prevented my traveling to Japan. As for your last letter, the experiment you outlined within, it is breathtaking, but I think you're missing something. It is not the formation of the tissue you're after, it's the function you're trying to duplicate. A simple statement, but a difficult thing to actually do. I believe I have a solution. It's not one I offer lightly, but I know you're doing this for Celia. Maybe an old fool can be of one last service after all. The tumor that will soon kill me is located in the medulla, but my cerebellum and frontal lobe are clear. Enclosed is a power of attorney. Use my tissue and my brain impulses as a roadmap, and use it quickly. Once this blasted tumor claims me, it will be too late. Your friend, Harrison.
The idea of using a living brain to grow a neural net within... My God, it was way beyond merely unethical. But the computer simulation said it would work. That was why I'd gone down this road in the first place. It was getting the net to actually grow in dead tissue that was the problem. But assuming this insane idea would work, that it needed living tissue to copy, I could save my little girl. May God forgive me.
Forward Momentum presents Bubblegum Crisis. Mega Tokyo 2047, the story of the Night Sabers. Morning, February 13th, 2047. Green Hill Cemetery, Southern Mega Tokyo.
Irene was dead. The funeral was a Western-style affair, more wake than a religious ceremony. Only a handful of people, mostly Irene's friends and co-workers. Of her family, only her sister came. She was nearly as destroyed by the loss as I was. Irene was dead. The police came a few minutes after I'd discovered her, lifeless on the floor of the apartment we shared. They called it a robbery gone wrong. Several small valuables were missing, and the place had been thoroughly tossed. They said she'd probably surprised the robber, that the defensive wounds on her forearms meant they struggled. Irene had fought to live. But in the end, the blood loss had been too much. She died all alone.
Miss Yamazaki?
I turned. Irene's sister stood there, red, worn eyes behind dark glasses.
I'm Rika Chang. Irene was my sister.
I tried to smile, but honestly, I didn't think I could just then. She spoke of you often. I'm sorry we had to meet this way.
In the last letter, she said you two were living together. I want to thank you for that. Irene had her problems with our family, but she was very dear to me. I know her last days were happy ones, thanks to you.
She bowed formally. Reika was wrong. Irene's last days weren't happy. They were a lie. Her fiancé had been murdered 3 months earlier. Ever since, she'd been staggering her way toward living with the loss. Just when she'd finally begun to turn the corner, the people who'd killed Eric caught up with her. I found myself speaking aloud. If only I'd been there.
We do what we can.
Reika was wrong. I could do more. And by the blood of my friend, I would. No matter what.
AD Police Headquarters.
Slow day. The whole section was bored, which of course meant they were all gossiping like mother hens. I was using the time to finish up Leon's witch hunt on Mike Newcastle. So far, the guy was squeaky clean. Sure, he lived awfully well for a single guy on a cop's salary, but he had a decent, if small, investment income I found at a local broker. I was combing through his case files now. It was almost a relief when my desk phone rang. Nene Romanova.
Hey, it's me.
Lena! Are you all right?
Yeah, funeral was today. It was a bit rough.
My heart bled for her. I can't imagine what she was going through.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Actually, there is. My building has a security camera along my hallway, and more in the elevators and stairwells. I know the police took the video feeds for that night.
She was asking me this on an open line! My ADP office, no less! If I got caught, being fired was the least of my worries. So, I'd just have to not get caught. I started the inquiry. It was simple. The normal police computers have so many holes in the firewall, it looks like a chain-link fence.
Lena, no. You know I have no idea how to hack the police system. Even if I did, I'd never do such a thing. It's against the law. And the award for the best actress in an ADP uniform goes to...
Right. Forget I asked. I don't know what I was thinking.
There, I was in. The footage was all in a central location. All I had to do was copy the file, and... Bingo! It's all right. I know you're upset. After work, would you like to get together? Heck, we can even watch Pretty Woman again.
It is a classic. Thanks, Nene. See you later.
Bye.
The file finished and I decided to take a look. Nothing. Wall to wall, nothing. Just empty hallways, vacant elevators. Ugh, the entire thing was a mass of the same images over a 30-minute clip. Wait, a medium-sized apartment complex at night, and no one walked down Lena's hall or used the elevator? I love a good mystery. Cracking knuckles, I got to work. First stop was the Hall of Records, Building Maintenance Division. One of the great things about the modern age, everything is computerized, and that means even the most mundane minutiae is cataloged and recorded. Yep, there was a record of the number and times of elevator movements for that apartment building. Filter by the ID of the elevator by Lena's apartment, sort by time and select the appropriate window. Okay, three trips. First went down from Lena's floor, and judging by the recorded weight load, it was probably Lena herself. The next two were an hour apart, an up and a down. Weight load? Whoa! 639 pounds? Multiple people then, or Jabba the Hutt, whichever. This meant the video had definitely been doctored. Removing someone from a video really isn't that hard. It's just a matter of masking them with a selection of the background from when they weren't there. Back in the Stone Ages of the 1990s, it had taken many artists several hours to do stuff like this. Nowadays, my watch had enough computing power to do the job. Of course, the reason artists did it was because they caught things my watch would miss. Things like stray shadows and odd reflections. And there it was, one odd bit of reflection in the windshield of a parked car. Not clear enough to see, or even enhance, though. But don't fret, the doctor is in. The car in question was a fairly common model. I pulled the specs from the police database. Okay, using the path of the odd reflection, the dimensions of the windshield, and... bingo! A face. Big, mean bruiser of a guy, too. Cyber-augmented, I'd bet my heart zoop. I ran it through the Interpol facial recognition database. Got a hit almost at once. I started reading, and my eyes widened in horror.
Park, near Lena Yamazaki's apartment complex.
I knew what Irene meant about not being able to face a home full of memories. The idea of stepping foot in that place, I just couldn't do it. So I'd come here after the funeral instead. This park was near a school, and the sound of children playing was soothing to my fried nerves. The jarring note of my cell was decidedly less so. Lena.
I found him.
You have a name?
Sort of. More importantly, I got a face. The guy's a muscle for hire. Does a lot of odd jobs here and there. He's known as a cyber augment, and he's suspected of having numerous illegal modifications. Get this, though. The guy is listed under a pseudonym as being employed by Gene Stanley of Whitmark Labs.
The slimeball Eric mentioned in his video?
Yep.
Have the cops moved on that guy yet?
No. I know the disc was received as per Celia's instructions, but it's not even logged as evidence yet.
I started swearing like Pris.
Well, Lena, language...
Don't start, Nene! The damn... They must have somebody in the police. They must have made the proof disappear. Stanley and his bosses are going to walk!
We don't know that. I kept a copy of the disc's contents. I'm gonna slip them in.
I hung up on her. Platitudes and reassurances weren't what I wanted to hear just now. No. I was gonna have to take care of this on my own.
AD Police Headquarters.
I looked at the phone like it had just started speaking Bulgarian. Lena was really, really upset. I was thinking about what I should do for her when one of the data crawlers beeped. A while back, I developed a search routine that would cross-reference all active search protocols with each other as a way of spotting patterns quicker. The cross-check had caught something. There was a connection between Gene Stanley and Mike Newcastle? I brought up the file. Mike had been an investigating officer in a blackmail case back with the Normal Police 5 years ago. Gene Stanley was one of the suspects. I knew the guy was slimy. Blackmail would be just his style. The case never went anywhere, as far as I could tell. On a lark, I checked Mike's tax forms from then onward.
the same year his investments began paying off. I went to dig into the account, only to discover that Mike Newcastle owned stock in several dead companies. Well, hello there, bribery money. I copied my findings. On a whim, I threw in the data from Eric's disk. Then I called Leon.
Cafe, just outside the rift.
I'm not a gourmet cook. When I get hungry, I usually either go out or whip up a batch of my grilled cheese surprise. Unfortunately, this time the surprise was that the bread was the wrong color and fuzzy. So I headed up and out of the rift and went to the first place that looked decent. I sat at a Western-style lunch counter and waited for a burger and fries. Most of the clientele seemed to be business types, salarymen out for a quick bite before returning to the rat race. The place had a small TV that was turned to one of those news info channels that was covered in scrolling data about the markets, the state of the world, everything and anything. They were talking about some upcoming deal between Genom and another company. The Genom angle perked my ears. Hopefully it was bad news for him. My lunch came, and I was busy adding a liberal amount of ketchup to the burger when the news anchor announced,
"Here we have with us a rare treat, a chance to speak with arguably the prince of the Genom Empire, Brian J. Mason, Senior Vice President of Genom."
I dropped the bottle to the floor. It shattered into flying shards and spilled crimson. I knew that man. I knew him as I did my own reflection. I saw his face every night. His eye. Cold and grim. Him.
"Miss?"
the serving boomer asked.
"Miss? Are you all right? Please allow me to clear that up."
I couldn't take it. I dropped money on the counter and ran. I don't remember getting on the bike. I don't remember driving to Celia's. I don't even remember barging into her office. The next image clear in my head is me slamming both fists onto her desk. "Who the fuck is Mason?" She returned a level gaze.
"He's the senior VP at Genom. The right hand of Quincy Rosenkreutz himself."
"He killed Rick!"
"Yes, he probably did."
"Don't you even care? This is the monster I've been looking for!" She stood and met me glare for glare.
"I realize that. What do you propose to do about it?"
"Oh, well, let's see. I'm definitely gonna put my fist through his skull!" She sat back down and held her temples.
"First, we'd never get near him. We'd be dead before we got anywhere close. Second, what would it accomplish?"
"Justice!"
"Don't talk to me about justice. Don't you think I want him dead too? Mason killed my father, damn it."
That put me back on my heels. "Then why won't..."
"Because I want the organ grinder, not his monkey."
"Rosenkreutz. The man we saw at Cybergenics?"
"The same. He orchestrated all of this. He is the man we really want. And we will have him. In time."
The door crashed open behind me and Mackie raced in.
"Sis! Oh, hi, Briss. Listen, we've got trouble."
"What now?"
Celia sighed.
"Lena's heart suit is missing."
On a rooftop, across from the Mega Tokyo office of Whitmark Labs.
I sat in concealment, among the rooftop air conditioners of a building across from my target. The heat from all the building's exchangers should keep me concealed from casual scans. I had my hard suit's right arm locked on the windows of the Whitmark building across the way, the infrared microphone trained on one window after another, searching for his office. It was slow going, but I'd find it eventually. Celia's voice came over the suit's comlink.
"Lena, where are you? I'm pretty sure I know what you're up to. Think. You're endangering all of us."
"Yeah, probably. But it wouldn't have been necessary if Celia had gone along with doing this in the first place."
"Come back in, please. I know you're angry. But this is not the way."
She was getting desperate. She didn't think I knew about the tracker on each hard suit, or how to disable the beacon. As long as I didn't respond, they couldn't locate me. Celia needed my help if she wanted to stop me. Flaw in her logic there. Another voice jarred me back to the task at hand.
"I do
forget the Chang woman. There was no disc. What more do you want?
I want you to do your damn job. You've made more loose ends, not less.
There. Zoom the optics on that point. Damn. They closed the blinds. I couldn't see their faces. I switched over to thermal. From inside my own camouflaging air currents, it wasn't the best image quality, but I could see two vaguely humanoid shapes.
Lena, you disabled the tracker, but not the kill switch. I can shut you down with a word.
Kill switch? Not now. Not when I was so damn close. Please don't.
Lena?
Please, Celia. The disc. They've got someone in the police. They destroyed it. This is my one chance. Please don't stop me. I could all but hear Celia weighing the alternatives.
Fine. But you won't do this alone. The three of us will join you shortly. When this is over, we will talk.
I didn't like the sound of that. The drama in the office continued.
I gotta clean up your mess now.
Come on, Stanley. It's done. You said it yourself. Yeah, I got sloppy. Let's face it, you need me.
Oh, I do, huh?
Yeah, you got stuff on me, sure. But I got more on you. Go ahead, report me. So I get my shiny cyber parts stripped. I'll send you to the hole for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I guess you could. Okay, truce, truce.
Suddenly, one of the thermal blobs struck out at the other. But I couldn't wait. I flung myself off of the building and hit my flight pack, riding straight through the window of Stanley's office on a ribbon of white fire. I barreled through the office window like a comet.
Holy shit!
Using my momentum, I rolled to the door and blocked his only way out. Then I activated my external speakers.
Going somewhere?
Hold up! What the hell are you?
I want to have a word with you first.
I made to seize the little tow rag by the neck, but the dead thing in the corner suddenly lurched up.
Stanley!
Fuck me! You're still alive?
The flesh was melting from the cyborg even as it struggled to rise. Snake-like tendrils of artificial muscle tearing themselves free and flailing about. Some had sunk into the floor and were integrating with it. It was like watching roots push through loose soil in seconds instead of years.
Stanley!
More of the tentacles exploded out of the walls around the man who'd ordered my friend's death. They ripped him to shreds. Gene Stanley died with a bloody little hiccup and a look of stunned terror, as if he couldn't believe he was mortal after all. The thing suddenly turned its attention to me. The waving, striking bands of whatever it was were now emerging from all over the room. Avoiding them was like trying to stay dry in a car wash. I sent both taser knives deep into its center mass of what had been the body, and let go with a full charge. The monster gave a huge lurch, and then even more of the damn tendrils exploded out of the walls toward me. Time to go. I hit my jets and leaped for the window, only to be brought short as the thing wrapped around my legs and slammed me back down. My head hit the floor, and the world went away.
My brand spanking new blue motorslave transformed around my hard suit. Its jets flared and carried me up towards the battle. Chris's red moto slave next to me and Celia in just her hard suit following directly behind. No need to ask where Lena'd gone. The entire top quarter of the Whitmark building was now awash in what looked like mutated boomer flesh. The disgusting, squirming mass of biotech material was slowly growing, consuming the building to feed its own mass. Over the tack net, I could hear Celia's exclamation.
My God, Henderson. Is this...
I'm afraid so, my lady. It's the cyberdroid phenomena. The original boomer substance is trying to merge with the structure of the building. It shows all the signs of becoming an actual colonist boomer.
How are we supposed to stop this thing, then?
We have to contain it. As it gets larger, more complex, the organism will eventually have to develop a central system. A brain, if you will. We kill that, the rest should die with it. Until then, we have to keep it from spreading to other structures, or splitting into multiple organisms.
And if it tries to absorb us?
It can't. The boomer substance can merge with most non-organic mass, but the current in the artificial musculature in our hard suits will offer us some protection.
Then, I spotted what we've been looking for. Celia, look! It's Lena! She was hanging by the legs in mid-air, over 100-foot drop, a rapidly attenuating mass of the converted techno-flesh, the only thing between her and certain death. Her hard suit was intact, but she was obviously out cold.
Nene, I'll cut her free. You catch her.
Ready, Celia. I'll be ready. I dropped beneath the mass of stuff and holstered my moto slave's rifle, freeing both hands to catch Lena when she fell. But the thing was ready for us. Maybe it wasn't as mindless as it looked. A fresh mass of fleshy tentacles exploded from the building, swamping Celia in a formless wave of boomer mass.
Damn it, Nene! Open fire! We gotta kill her! Let go of me, you bastard!
Chris, I'm coming!
Miss Nene, behind you! Look out!
Henderson's warning was too late. I was caught too. The entire building was changing around me. I couldn't move my arms or legs. I couldn't escape. The monster began to squeeze.
The pressure was incredible. I could feel the suit compacting around me, the outer ceramic armor splintering, and the artificial muscles tightening centimeter by centimeter.
Get out! If anyone can hear me, escape! That's an order!
Nothing. Not even static. That's it, then. This is the end of it all. Killed by something no one else had thought possible. An urban myth killed by an insane concept. I'd have laughed if it hadn't hurt so much. I could feel the neck starting to go. It was the only major weak point in the armor. It made sense it would fail. My air cut off, and I prepared for the end. But I wasn't prepared for the tea party. I was in my childhood room. My childhood self sitting at a table with stuffed animals at every other seat but one. That one was occupied by my father.
Hello, Celia. This is nice. The tea is excellent, by the way.
Daddy? What is this?
This is the way your subconscious is processing this message. It was implanted years ago.
I remembered. My 18th birthday, I received an odd gift. A data unit. It took some doing, but I got it hooked into the virtual reality computer console in my bedroom. And my world changed. As soon as I donned the computer's audiovisual headset, my mind was assaulted with an intense flow of data. Footage of my father's murder. His notes on the original Cyberdroid. Details of all his inventions, including hard suits. My father set down his cup.
I'm sorry. I knew the road would be difficult, but I never intended.
Uncle Harrison said you'd left me something more. Is this it?
Harrison? Yes, his neural net was the prototype. At his insistence, I used his brain as a guide, and it worked! I was able to synthesize thought itself! I could save you! I could...
He ran down. But there was a problem, wasn't there?
Yes. The process I used to save you, to bring you back from that awful injury, it effectively murdered my friend. Harrison was dying of a brain tumor, but the process reversed it. It gave him back his health and the functional mind of someone half his age, but his psyche, it couldn't take it. Harrison splintered.
Henderson?
Yes. Harrison's desire to save you, to perform what he saw as one last service to mankind, became his shield. Henderson took over.
But Harrison's not totally gone, is he?
No. He's in there still, and when he sees you need help, he can come out for brief periods. He activated this message. His words set your neural net to enter this state the next time your adrenaline spiked.
To what end? I'm dying out there.
Not yet. This isn't your time. I gave you and your brother certain resources, advantages to help you along the road. You can still carry out the plan. Just remember this. What I did, the horrible, evil thing I did, was done of love. I do love you, Celia. I love Mackie, and I loved your mother. I only hope that someday you can forgive me.
The world faded away, and the pain began to return. Daddy? Wait! Don't go! Daddy!
Oh, great. Now Celia was losing it. She kept screaming for her father, and we were all about to be crushed by Boomerzilla.
That's it. Miss Nene's scans show a core has developed.
Are you sure taking it out will kill this thing?
Positive, Miss Priscilla.
Great. Can anybody reach it?
I can!
Mackie cried over the TACnet. I blinked my HUD screen to show the roof across the way, and the hard suit stood there.
Computer, activate sniper mode.
The hard suit began reconfiguring, servo pods on his back spinning up and pivoting around to point across the gulf of open air right at the cybernetic monster. Mackie's suit looked like it was packing some serious firepower. Holy shit! Go, kid, go!
Henderson, give me a target!
There. Be careful. Mistress Celia's head is barely a foot away.
Got it. Everybody, hit your jets. When this thing dies, it'll drop you.
And with that, three bolts of plasma fire erupted from the cannons on Mackie's shoulders and plowed into the monster's mass. I felt it lurch. Hit it again!
Bloody hell, it's using Celia as a shield!
Mackie's big guns swung back to their normal configurations, and he sprinted forward, hitting his jets and charging straight in, vibro swords extending from both wrists as he flew. He hit the thing blades first, and with a titanic spasm, it died. I hit my jets. Mackie emerged carrying Celia, and Nene had Lena's suit cradled in her moto slave's arms. We all landed back across the way again. Lena and Celia were stirring, waking up on their own. Nene was admiring Mackie's suit. I looked down into the street. I saw quite a few people fleeing and one being dragged away. I zoomed in my optics. Crap, is that Leon?
Yep, he's arresting Stanley's boss.
How did he...
For conspiracy to commit murder, distribution of illegal narcotics, creating a public menace, and anything else he can think of between here and jail.
How? Nene preened.
He had a little help bringing the case all together.
I laughed. Well, I'll be. He finally gets to do something.
Redmond's in Tinsel City.
3 days after the ordeal, we gathered. I reserved a room at Redmond's. The man Lena and I both knew as Uncle Nigel was only too happy to oblige us. No one would observe. No one would hear. We had our own private world. Pris, Lena, and Nene sat to my right. Mackie and Henderson to my left. Before us were platters and plates, bottles and flasks. But no one moved. The last weeks have been a trial for many of us. I nodded to Lena. Partially by actions of our enemies. And again to Pris and Mackie. And partially by my actions. I forget sometimes that we all have our own reasons to be here. In my haste to protect my friends, I nearly sacrificed you by driving you away. It took the action of a great man to bring me to my senses. For that, I am truly grateful. I bowed to Henderson, who looked surprised and downright flummoxed by the display. But I know he understood. On some level. I hope, I only hope, you can all find it in yourselves to forgive me. There was silence. At length, Pris spoke up.
Well, you did buy the booze.
And the food.
And she is letting me keep the suit.
It is not the place of a gentleman to question the motives of a friend, still less one as close as a daughter.
Oh, Celia, that was so beautiful.
They knew. They understood something I'd missed till now. They didn't want my protection. They wanted me to have theirs. We ate, we drank, we even sang. It was a good, good day.
You've been listening to Bubblegum Crisis, Tinsel City Blues, Episode 3, a Forward Momentum production. Based on the anime Bubblegum Crisis, which is copyright AIC Artmake. Featured in this episode were Rina Adachi as Lena Yamazaki, Taylor Carlson as Pris, Kristen Mass as Celia Stingray, Christopher Stadtha as Leon McNichol, Lindsay Steinberg as Nene Romanova, and Sean Francis as Dr. Carl Stingray. Also heard in this episode were Mike Dent as Mackie Stingray, Chris Walker as Henderson, Eric Ulp as Richard Decker, Nathan P. Butler as Gene Stanley, Alex Gilmore as Kenneth Rhodes, Chase Johnson as the Tin Man, and Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard as Reika Chang. Heard earlier in the series were Tanya Milojevic, Alex Gilmore, Carl Gosling, Devlin James, Will Navison, and Edwin Tiong. This is Dylan Spencer. The episode was written and directed by Devin Cox. Music for the series is drawn primarily from the Bubblegum Crisis anime. For a complete music and vocal credit list, please visit forwardmomentumproductions.com/BGC. Bubblegum Crisis Tinsel City Blues is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Bubblegum Crisis, the music, and non-original sound effects used herein remain the property of their original creators. No infringing claims are intended. The Night Sabers will return.